Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Yo, mic check. Yeah, here you go. Oh, nah, he over here. Yeah, I heard he got that hot new thing. It's called Switch. Let's get it going. Vibe to vibe a second. This a club, girl, while you arrive naked. Hear that howl, the veteran glide the record. But don't download, go out and buy the record.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to a very special Boston Bashable Game podcast. This is the Nintendo Switch reveal special, the new Switcheroo. Joining me today are the hosts of Retro Zaps, another retro gaming podcast, and the real inspiration to the Mario Brothers, Dave and the DCD.
What's up, man?
How's it going?
It's going good. It's going good.
Now, you know, that would insinuate that one of us is Luigi. It's definitely David.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Luigi.
Luigi.
Mario.
It's very appropriate, too, since we are talking about the Nintendo Switch in this episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I guess my first question is, who has it pre-ordered?
I do.
Not me.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you can't find one, or you just don't have an interest?
Not interested in buying it at this very moment, but we can certainly get into that as we dive into this episode for sure.
You see, with Robert and I being members of the gaming media, we have to be on top of all forms of gaming at every moment. So it's kind of like we have to do it.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, like, it's not to say that I won't be playing it when it comes out, but like, I'm just not personally buying one at this moment. So.
Right. Did you, DCD, did you wind up getting it in the multicolored, or did you stick with the gray?
I got the red and blue, so, like, when I play it as, like, a portable, it looks like something like a kid's iPad, but, you know, I don't care.
It does kind of look like that, though.
So, I'm an adult. I don't care.
You have the Skittles Deluxe version.
But, yeah, I could only get the gray version. All the colored ones were sold out for the pre-order at my GameStop, but you know what? The colors don't make it extra special. It's just the design.
Yep.
So, yes, the presentation that happened this past Thursday night. You know, we were kind of joking about it before we started recording, the whole snapping aspect. And I had to promise them I would not do the snap sound effect for this show. But I did kind of like the whole theatrical aspect of it. Like, one presenter just appearing and then disappearing and another appearing and so on and so forth. It kind of had this sort of, like, Waiting for Godot feel to it.
Yeah, but by the same token, like, they overdid it to the point I was like, it's time to switch to a heavier alcohol.
Exactly. Yeah. Although by the end of it, I had the switch snap right out of, like, you know, right into, like, some new pants, honestly, just because, you know, there were some, like, really amazing stuff, you know, particularly with, like, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, like, it was good to kind of get, like, some more, like, details, especially, like, all the kind of really pressing, pertinent details, like, with this new console. So.
Right. So the lowdown of it is getting a March 3rd release, $300 for the system, $70 for the Pro Controller, $80 for the Joy-Con controller for extras, and games are going to be at most $60.
Yeah, I see. Some people are bitching and moaning about like the high price controllers. They're starting to say that Nintendo is moving into Apple pricing, but you have to understand that's the way the market is. Mm-hmm. We are not talking about like one simple one-piece $65 Xbox controller. There are different parts, and these controllers have the little motion sensors inside, so there is a cost to them. You have to understand.
Absolutely. I mean, keep in mind that the Wii U, when it first launched, it was $349 for the 32 gigabyte version, and that was just a home console. This one is the hybrid home and portable console, which if you think about, must be like, it must be really expensive to make just one of these things. They're probably taking a loss from this, like, from pricing it at $300. But I reckon that they'll make the money back as they did with the Wii U launch, which is, it goes back into the green when they buy a game.
Well, if you're looking at like Nintendo's like previous history, though, I mean, like they typically don't sell their consoles at a loss, honestly. And like the actual core console itself, like the screen part thing, whatever, the actual console is actually kind of like made out of like primarily the NVIDIA Shield, if I'm not mistaken. So I mean, like, you know, and also, you know, again, kind of going back with like Nintendo's previous history, I don't think they're selling it at a loss, but you know, that's just kind of like the way that they, you know, kind of go about their business. And it's been successful enough to kind of keep them going for this long. So,
yeah, I mean, besides, if I recall correctly, Nintendo hasn't made a bad peripheral since the days of the Virtual Boy.
Right.
And even that was, like, technically solid. So, you know, it's like they're not really known for making stuff that falls apart at the seams.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
I totally.
I mean,
if you
break a Joy-Con, the only way you really break a Joy-Con is if you lose it under the couch or something. That's on you.
Yeah,
which will happen, by the way.
It will. Yeah, these kids are going to be like, "Where'd you put the Joy-Con?" Oh,
yeah. We're 5 years old.
although Evan, like, it's you know, it's interesting that you mentioned too, like with the pricing as well, because you know, I believe you said that this like $350 for the Wii. That was how much was the memory on that again?
Well, 32 gigabytes if you went for the $350 version for the Wii U, but then if you wanted just the 8 gigabyte one, which nobody really wanted, that was that was just
$299. Yeah, it was like $299. So it was like $50 price difference. So we are getting the Switch with the 32 gig for $300, and it's practically like a little mini console and the handheld all in one. So
you can swipe.
It's about right with Nintendo pricing.
Yep, and then you can just swipe out the mini SD cards for 64 and 128 gigabyte. You don't have to deal with like with the new Nintendo 3DS. You don't have to like unscrew the back of it to try to replace it.
Right.
Nope, you can just pop it in.
And you don't have to plug in an external. You don't have to plug in an external hard drive to make the system look even bulkier, like you did with the Wii U.
Yeah, yeah. Well, which, don't get me wrong, I do like the concepts of external
hard drives.
That's
a nice option. But, you know, yeah. If you have to move the Wii around someplace, you have to take the hard drive with you, because most of your games are on it. That's the thing.
Is the Nintendo Switch even compatible with an external hard drive?
No, like,
I don't believe so. I don't believe so, no.
Okay, I don't think it's possible.
That option's completely off the table.
I'm fine with that, because that actually encourages you to, instead of downloading the AAA games, you buy them, because they're these little memory cards anyway, so you can take like the Switch and all these little memory cards with you and still have the games installed on your system. So mm-hmm. it's a good one-two system. And you know, and we can make use again. You remember like those old carrying cases for the PS Vita. It's almost like we can use that again, which is great.
Right, which, by the way, you get one of those if you pre-order the special edition of Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which I did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And I rarely ever do special editions. I know we're going to talk a little bit more about Zelda, but I rarely do special editions. But this one just had my number on it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks spectacular. You know, the one with the Master Sword model looks absolutely fantastic. And
Sold out at my GameStop for that one, so I'm like, all right. I'm okay. You know what? I have so many Japanese plush toys and Nendoroids and figurines. I don't even have a place to put the Master Sword.
I don't either. That's the thing. I get a lot of collectibles, too. So I'm like, I'm not too worried about that. But I definitely want the special edition with that, you know, carrying case. Because I know I'm more than likely I'm going to take the Switch to a couple of parties and keep a close eye on it.
Yeah. I think there's like the special edition as well as like the collectors. And I think the collectors is the only difference between the collectors and the special is the Master Sword figure, right?
Yeah, that's it. That is it.
Okay.
Going back to what we were talking about with the whole innovation aspect of it and Nintendo being very good at it, is that they were doing this whole presentation and they were showing off, oh, Nintendo was the first to have the X and Y buttons. Nintendo was the first to have the little stick and then the first to have a rumble pack. First to even think about bringing portableness with the handle on the GameCube and the first to do motion controllers. And then you just kind of have to realize that in order for gaming to move forward, Nintendo has to do it first.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Nintendo's always tried to do innovation. It hasn't always been for the better. You know, the Wii U was supposed to innovate, and not everybody really caught on with it. And again, with the Virtual Boy, I have to bring that up again, because right. technically that was supposed to introduce virtual reality to gaming, and it made everybody throw up instead. You know, but, you know, there are some ideas that really pay off. The Wii really sold incredibly well for the company, and it introduced motion gaming for a few years there. So, I mean, the idea of being able to take your gaming experiences on the go by just, you know, picking up something instead of having to buy a second copy of the game or wait for it to download through CrossBuy or anything like that, it's a pretty neat idea. And you can play, like, you know, full console games on it. You don't have to worry about, like, these shrunken down Vita experiences.
I mean, it, you know, it's kind of funny, though, like, you know, they say that, like, you know, Nintendo, you know, is known to innovate, and they are, and they, you know, they certainly, you know, are kind of innovating in this sense, like, where it is this hybrid, like, home and portable console type of idea, but they're also kind of, like, behind in some cases, too, like, especially when you're talking about, like, with, like, online features, for example, and it seems like they're finally kind of catching up, actually, in terms of, like, you know, with what with, Microsoft and Sony are doing, actually, in terms of actually getting an online infrastructure, and we don't even know what the full details of that, if that is yet, whether or not we're going to be buying, like, you know, Super Mario Brothers 3 for, like, the 17th time or not.
I was reading online. It does say that this online subscription will have free games with it. So there will be some aspect to that.
It'll be like one NES game and one Super NES. It's one NES and one Super NES. And they'll have online play included. So can you imagine getting, like, into a battle with somebody with Ice Climber? Or something like that.
Ooh, right, yeah.
What the hell? Stop doing that.
Or do some online Battletoads, maybe, or something. I don't know.
But, if that game makes it.
If it makes it, that's true, yeah. It's being rare and all. But, that does intrigue me for sure. Well,
listen, you know, Major Nelson was, like, praising the whole Switch presentation the other night, so I'm thinking, maybe he can convince Rare to bring Battletoads to the Switch.
That's a large cry, but
it is a large cry. But I'm just saying,
well, Halo was in production for the 3DS at one point, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah. All right, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was in production for the DS, and it'd be like, "What are we doing? It's Halo. What are we doing?"
Right.
But obviously, you know, there are some concerns with the online service. They're obviously taking a paid subscription route now, but they're launching it free, and for several months, people will be able to see the effectiveness of that service, what it has to offer and everything like that before people decide whether or not they want to, you know, put money down on it, which is a good idea. Yeah. And, you know, because there have been doubts in the past. You know, Nintendo's online issues with friend codes and all that bullshit, you know, it really got in the way of trying to just get into a quick session with your friend. But it sounds like they learned from that. They're introducing, you know, a better friend system through their smart app. They're introducing voice chat for the first time in quite a while, if I recall.
On the Wii, but it was not on the Wii U, unless, of course, you were using the their Skype.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it.
So, I mean, making this more convenient, it's really, I think it'll be worth it. It's just a matter of seeing how they're implemented into games. Like, you know, can you trash talk somebody in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe? That's what I want to know.
I think more than like great.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Sorry, what was that? You were choking on my dust? What?
For sure, yeah. So, I don't know, it'll be interesting, you know, to see, though. I mean, just because, you know, again, like, Nintendo's kind of been, like, a bit behind the eight ball, like, in terms of anything online, really. You know, like, especially with, like, you know, the whole, like, friend codes thing and whatever. So, it'll just be interesting to kind of see, like, how they go about it. They are ahead in some cases, but certainly behind in other cases, for sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'm still curious to know if they're actually going to have something like Twitch integration or YouTube gaming installed with the Switch. I mean, I know that the majority of that presentation that they showcased live in Tokyo was all just about the games and the system itself, but I'm curious to know what sort of applications are going to be added to the Switch later on.
Well, you know, they got the share button like added on there, so they're kind of taking a page out of like Sony's book in terms of you know, kind of getting
social
some kind
media
of like
sharing,
social media, and like online functionality, as well as kind of adding video like later on down the road. But for now, I believe like from launch, you'll be able to share like screenshots and things like that.
And I would love to see them bring back, you know, the popular apps that worked well in Wii U. I'm talking about YouTube and Netflix, stuff like that. Obviously,
Crunchyroll, of course,
really helped. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be a DVD or Blu-ray machine, so it's got to depend on some sort of streaming service in order to keep, you know, audiences happy. And I would think those are coming around. They weren't announced last night, but they're coming. Come on. I mean, only something like the only something like the PlayStation TV doesn't have Netflix. Give me a break.
I mean, that's kind of like my hope, honestly, with the fact that Nintendo is going with like a paid online service. Like I believe it's in the fall, like when they're kicking that up. So you know, like if they are doing that, then hopefully it will be of a quality where you could, you know, where you could stream you know, games successfully, or like be able to play games online without any sort of like you know, major lag, or you know, just the service being terrible in general. So.
Right, totally. And that's why they're going to be releasing it for free before they do the whole paid service, because they want to get all the kinks out before they go, okay, now it's all set. The paid subscription begins now.
Yeah. So it's like a 6-month beta test, if you will.
Practically, yeah, which is, I think is pretty smart. I mean, like, no other system really did that. Like, right out the gate, Xbox Live was Xbox Live there at the start of Xbox, or was that, like, a couple of years down the line?
It started on the original Xbox.
Yes,
yeah, it started, like late in its life, I know.
But Xbox 360, they started introducing, like, all these downloadable games and everything like that, and service features.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Moving on with the whole thing, what I'm curious to know about is, like, this whole 3D Rumble design aspect that makes it, I don't know, does it feel like what you're playing or feel like what you're holding? Like, what is that?
It's supposed to be some sort of surreal way to make the controls feel more realistic. I'm just trying to figure out how they would apply to, like, you know, say, younger gamers or anything like that. You would think there'd be an option, like, if you don't want it, you can turn it off. Because that's always helpful, like, for the people that can't stand the rumble features or whatnot.
Yeah, it was a little weird, like, how much time that they were putting into it, like, where it feels like you're holding a glass of water, and, like, here's, like, the ice, and you're just kind of clinking it around or whatever. I guess it's kind of, like, to show off, like, just the, you know, the technology that's, like, behind, like, these Joy-Con controllers. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that, you know, it does have this kind of, like, weight and feel, and it kind of makes sense, too, like, the types of games they're coming out with, like, with the, it was a 1-2 Switch or whatever it's called. doing the whole, like, you know, like, little, like, Wild West draw kind of thing. So I imagine that there's some kind of I imagine there'll be some kind of rumble, like where it kind of gets more and more like tense, or you know, goes faster or whatever, mm-hmm. as it's going into like the draw, and once it stops you draw or something like that. I imagine that's how it works, and that's how it'll work in a similar fashion anyway with games that make use of this the motion sensor and all that.
Right
absolutely. Hold on, we might actually have one more person joining in on the call.
Oh, nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, look who's dropped into the show. It is the one, the only, hip-hop gamer Gerard Williams. I know that's not the perfect introduction, but it's the only thing I could come up with at the top of my head.
Hey, it was more energetic than what we got, everybody. David, fuck.
I know.
We here. Let's get it in. We got to talk about this Switch. It's on right now. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy. Yep. I can't wait. Let's get it popping. There's a lot to talk about. Feelings is going to get hurt. I don't care. Let's get it. Got stuff to talk about.
All right. So what's your opinion on the pricing on it, Gerard?
The pricing, I don't think is smart. Being at $299, I will say it's decent. It's plausible, you know what I'm saying? But I think $199 would have been perfect. $249 was a sweet spot. $299, that's stretching it. And the reason why is because Nintendo you can't think like you're the only, you know, one-stop shop in the gaming world. You're not, like, this competition. And when you have competition out there, you gotta actually acknowledge competition, because for a long time Nintendo hasn't really been like top tier of on competition. So I think they got to maneuver better when it comes to that. So the price is me personally, I'm still gonna get it. I'm just a hardcore gamer. I get everything. But,
yeah.
For the average consumer, you gotta have a frame of mind. You got to think about it from both ways. You got to think about it from the person that's selling it, and you got to think about it from the person that's going to buy it. You got to think about it from the hardcore gamer and the casual gamer. Like, you got to think about it from all these areas. And when you look at what's out there, and you showed off what you showed off, especially when your conference wasn't all that great, it's you know, you got to factor in these things. And I feel that $299 is something that's could be tough.
You know, I'll tell you this. You have a point, but there's also a counterpoint to that. The point is, Nintendo has price systems in the past. They sold the NES, the Super NES, the Nintendo 64, and the GameCube all for $200 before moving into the $250, $350 price range with the Wii and the Wii U. So it's inflation is basically what it is.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I can see your point there. But by the same token, take a look at the competition. Like the PlayStation 3, $499 or $599, or Xbox 360 at $400 or something like that. So it's still, I think, in the competitive range, but I can totally see where you're coming from. But $300 is a hell of a lot better than $400.
No, well, here's the thing. Like, I give you an example, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you look at the PS3 era and the 360 era, PS3 online was free online, and then the Xbox 360, you had to pay for it. But when you look at the quality, it was better to pay for it than it was to get something free. So you mm-hmm. always got to factor in mm-hmm. on quality. It's not so much about price. When it depends on what you're getting. So when you look at Nintendo Switch and you look at that price, and then you look at a PS4 or Xbox One and you look at that price, in terms of what you're getting, the price doesn't seem as bad. It's just like with a PC. If you look at what you can accomplish with a certain PC, then when you look at the price, it's like, I don't mind spending this type of money on this when I'm looking at what I'm getting. So it's not so much about price. It's about value for the price.
Right.
See, you say what you want about PS3, though. It shouldn't have been $600. I'm like,
A PS3 should not. A PS3 should not have been $600. I understand
Remember when they came out with the Xbox 360 that was $1,000 when it first came up? It was like some special edition of it.
Yeah.
But in terms of the PS3 though, like when it first came out, like that's like $600. That was Sony basically priced themselves out of the out of the competition more or less. That's why they lost in that generation against the Xbox 360.
What
did you do?
Don't start.
Well, you didn't say Felix was going to get hurt here, hip-hop. Felix was going to get hurt.
Look, I always got to remind people, you know what I'm saying?
But yeah, I'm trying to take it as fact. But at the same time, too, like with the Nintendo Switch, like the 300 is kind of like, pretty much like at the high end of like the range that we kind of expected, really. Like a lot of people were thinking in that 250 to 300 range anyway.
Because keep in mind that like the Nintendo new 3DS is $200. So you're paying an extra $100 to make it an actual home console aspect of it.
Well, you're looking at the 3DS though, and like that's primarily just like
handheld. Yeah, you can't compare that because that's just a handheld.
I mean, this is basically like an up-res like NVIDIA Shield, more or less, that Nintendo kind of put their own branding and like technology behind, which is fine. Like, and they're adding in like the value as far as like, what we were talking about earlier with like, with online services, as far as like adding in like NES and SNES games and a sort of PlayStation Plus, like, adding in like these games like every month sort of style. It's just a matter of like how good is that online, the online servers and like the service is going to be in general.
Right, which is why I made the point about why they're doing it for free first before they do the paid subscription stuff, because they want to test the waters of it, get all the bugs out, all the kinks out, before they're like, all right, this is all set, it's all good.
We can hope, yeah, for sure.
Now, here's what I want to say, right? Just before I move to the next point, just to tell you about the whole PS3 360 era, the problem is people that live in America feel like America is the only place that matters because they live there. If you look at global sales and revenue, PlayStation 3 outsold Xbox 360 on a global scale overall. And the reason why is because their exclusives help bounce them back, because that first, second year was horrible in terms of that price out of the competition. Mm-hmm. So in America, yes, 360 has more sales than PS3 in America, but globally, they did not. They lost overall. And anybody that wants to debate me, here's a question. If you have $20 million, right, but let's say $11 million is in America, does the $11 million count and the other $9 million don't, or do you want your full $20 million? Exactly. So that means everywhere matters. Okay, and that's the bottom line. And that's
I'm not debating that, but like at the beginning, like when the consoles were first shown, like not to make this about Xbox 360, PS3, but just to kind of quickly mention that it was at the beginning, like when the consoles were priced and Sony pricing the PS3 at $600, that was them kind of almost completely taking themselves out of the market in a way.
Oh, hell yeah. And keep in mind, too, that the Xbox 360 and also Xbox One as well, too, has completely bombed in Japan. They're barely even selling in double digits over there compared to, like,
single digits.
Or even single digits.
Right.
Plus, they don't have the support. I mean, Nintendo knows its support. I mean, that's the one thing they've gotten right, is that they have the worldwide launch going. And even if not all of them have the same sort of launch lineups, the fact that they're going for that sort of simultaneous launch so that Japan doesn't get this system like several months before the US gets it, like with the Nintendo 64. Mm-hmm. It's actually a push for the entire market, you know, and maybe some games are better catered to certain markets like Dragon Quest X, Dragon Quest XI to Japan or anything like that. But Nintendo understands what its audience wants, you know, and maybe it didn't fire on all cylinders like the Wii U it was supposed to, but still, the fact that it's got all the markets in mind, UK, Japanese, and America, you know, as long as they got all those markets in mind, you know, it's really a smart move, because we've seen it in the past. And we've seen it with systems going out in Japan first, then America, you know, or something like that. I'm just gonna start saying it like that now. Every time I run hip hop, how you doing, son? You living in America?
America.
But which leads me to the big news, the thing that made me happy, that finally Nintendo jumped on region free gaming.
Which is amazing. I want to implement
that. That is a big deal.
That is incredible. Incredible. I loved every minute of that. I felt that was dope. That's smart. And I just feel like every company should play to their strengths. I feel that Nintendo Switch, in my opinion, I feel like it's the Wii U all over again, but they have a better messaging. We know what it is and what it's gonna do and blah blah blah. So that's great. But I feel that in about 2 years, all that energy is going to fade away, and I feel like this could possibly be Nintendo's last system, and you're going to see another repeat of what Sega became in terms of a third-party developer, and Mario's going to be on other platforms.
Oh, see, you're breaking my heart, man. You are breaking my heart.
I can understand it is kind of Nintendo's last shot. The Wii U was kind of this indication that they didn't quite understand the market the way it was. But I have a feeling that this time around, they're going to give it their all. Like, it's all or nothing. Like, you know, Sega went on a high note. They went on a high note with the Dreamcast, one of their best systems. You know what I mean? Absolutely. So there is that hope that they can build that. And, you know, they're aware of what we want. You know, I'm reading up on this stuff where Reggie Fils-Aimé talked about Mother 3, which is reportedly getting localized, finally, and a new Metroid game. And he's like, we have these in mind, but we're pacing this stuff out. If we come out with everything all at once, then we have nothing to build on over the next few years.
Which is kind of like what happened with the launch. Right, of the Wii U, almost, because they had some pretty good launch titles on the Wii U, but then after that, it kind of pitter-pattered.
Well, you know, they had stuff like Bayonetta 2 and, you know, stuff like that. That's all they had. They didn't have the third-party support. Here, they were waiting to get that third-party balance. You know, they got EA back with FIFA. They got 2K back with NBA 2K18. Right. They got some companies covering different requirements, you know. Bandai Namco, they finally got Skyrim.
Like, they have that now, and it looks good now, like the third-party support and everything. But,
it depends on long-term.
But it all, depends on long term.
Thank you, Dave.
Like you said, Gerard. Like, in the 2 years time, I am interested to see, like, in 2 years time, like, on where that third party support goes, whether it stays or it goes in this case. But I do have to vehemently disagree with all of y'all.
Okay.
As far as this being Nintendo's last console, if it fails.
I'm not disagreeing with you, David. Hold on.
Okay, that's fine. So it's 2-on-2 in this case.
Yes.
So you have to understand how much money that Nintendo has in their coffers right now. They have enough money to have this fail and still go on in the hardware business.
Well, they could survive on the NES Classic by itself if they wanted to.
They could, absolutely.
More of it.
But if this fails, like, let's just say, hypothetically, if the Nintendo Switch fails, like, if it turns out to be like a Wii U or worse, you know, God forbid, then they'll likely just go as being a handheld console. They'll just make another 3DS type of thing and just be a handheld company. I can see them doing that.
I love that you said that, because you actually, because at first y'all was saying 2-on-2, you actually just agreed. You just said that they'll go on being a handheld console, if a handheld system, if this console doesn't pan out or possibly do worse than what the Wii U did.
You said that they'll go the way of Sega. And they're not going to go the way of Sega, because Sega did not nearly have as much money as Nintendo does.
He's right there.
Well, yeah. No, what I mean by in terms of going the ways of Sega, I'm talking about just, you know, developing games, like not having a console. Like that's what I meant. So I should.
But they will have a console. Like,
yeah.
A handheld is not a console. Like you don't say that. It'll
still be in the heart. Okay.
They'll still be in the hardware business.
Yes, hardware.
Yeah. I mean, they'll make a Super Nintendo Classic, and it'll be amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all semantics.
But you have to understand, Nintendo needs to make the decisions now so that this will stay true in the long term. They've got the third party support. Now it's a matter of what they do with it. I mean, I'm kind of hoping that they make more deals like they did with Bayonetta 2 and the Wii U. So I'm hearing about this, like they signed a deal with Ubisoft to bring Beyond Good and Evil 2 to the Switch first for a year, sort of like Microsoft did with Rise of the Tomb Raider. They need to make those key third-party deals that make it lucrative to make games for the Nintendo Switch, while at the same time giving the Switch the assets it needs to continue to fight, to continue to stay alive. The Wii U didn't have that. Nintendo was like, oh, we don't have third-party support? Well, here's Bayonetta. You know, we need more than that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's just a matter of them understanding that longevity, working with these companies to make these experiences that are make the Switch worthwhile. And I think they are going to do that. I think they understand now what caused the Wii U to fail and what they need to do with the Switch to succeed. It's just a matter of seeing what happens, like Gerard said, over the next couple of years to see if that longevity sticks it out. So far, I'm impressed by what's on the way, but that's just this year. Hopefully at E3, we'll get a bigger scope of what's to come in 2018.
And I can't agree more with you on that.
Absolutely, I agree with that. Now, I want to throw something else in here. And here's something that a lot of people don't talk about, but here's another fact. The average gamer is 34 years old, right? 34 to 38 years old, the average gamer. The highest percentage of gamers is in that age frame, right? Yeah. That's one. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is, and what makes a Nintendo a gift and a curse, is that they rely on things, they rely on their past successes to be their present success and answers for their future, and they fail every time. Because I'm gonna give you an example between PlayStation and Nintendo, just to give you an analogy, right?
Yeah.
So Nintendo started out, they had Mario, had Zelda, and all these great games, right? And still to this day, they can't live without Mario. They can't live without Zelda. They can't live without Donkey Kong.
Right.
Now, look, if you look at PlayStation, right, because in any business, especially when it comes to entertainment and stuff like that, we all grew up on Nintendo. We love this. But the thing is, we grow up. And when you grow up, as much as you love what you grew up with, you also get introduced to new things. And now you got new things to build on from what you grew up from.
Right.
And that's the reinventing process. So if you look at PlayStation, right, PlayStation 1, Crash Bandicoot was like their mascot. So you had Crash Bandicoot, you had Twisted Metal, you had Siphon Filter, Ridge Racer. Then you move on to PlayStation 2. You get introduced to God of War, Jack and Daxter, Ratchet and Clank, Gran Turismo. Then you move to PS3. You get introduced
Uncharted.
Motor Storm. You get introduced to Heavy Rain and all these other different games. Then you move on to PlayStation 4. And they introduce you to Order, to the Drive Club, to Until Dawn, and the VR now. Failed Death Stranding and all these new games. So the thing is, they don't rely on past successes. They continue to reinvent themselves and give you something new to look forward to. So there's always something new. There's always new life. There's always new energy. And that's the difference between Sony and any other company. And that's the reason why Nintendo, the reason why they can't grow and the reason why they can't last is because they play to the hearts of people that grew up with them. But the people that didn't grow up in the era that we grew up in, they're not living off Mario don't mean as much to them as it meant to us because they ain't grow up off of it. And because they're not giving you something new to realign that future legacy for their brand, they always going to be stuck stagnant.
Right. But to counterpoint that, it is true. Nintendo does rely on their franchises, but every once in a while they do introduce a new experience. Splatoon is a new experience, and it created this great innovation. But by the same token, they also do stuff with these franchises. It's not just Mario 6, Mario 7, Mario 8, anything like that. Super Mario Odyssey looks like the biggest Mario game we've ever seen. And if you've seen the gameplay, Gerard, you can't argue that. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild looks amazing.
Yes.
And see, so they may not move on from their familiar franchises, but they evolve those franchises, and that certainly beats nothing. Of course, would I love to see more original IPs? Yeah, but we're getting that. We're getting that with ARMS. We're getting that
I was about to bring it up.
Some of those experiences.
I mean, so they also have like
I'm talking in terms of impact. See, the impact is everything. Like, for example, right? To go back to the PlayStation thing, like in the PlayStation 1, like what's the name was a staple. Like Crash Bandicoot was like a staple.
It was a Crash and Tomb Raider. Those two were like the staple PlayStation. Yeah, yeah.
And then look how far they've grown.
Final Fantasy 7, that was big. That was an impactful thing. Then in the PS2 era, like God of War was an impactful thing. Gran Turismo was an impactful thing. Like, I'm talking about the passing of the torch. Type of impact. ARMS is a game that's fun, you'll play it and stuff like that, but it's something that's not going to be like long lasting. Like,
we don't know that though. We don't know that. For all we know, it could do for the fighting genre what Splatoon did for the shooter genre. It could introduce it to a whole new innovation. I mean, yeah, it may be a gimmicky game, but look at Punch-Out. Punch-Out evolved over the years. It became something from an arcade game to an NES experience with Mike Tyson.
What is it today? 2017. What is it today?
I mean, like, we're actually kind of talking about, like, strength of IPs here. And if we're talking about strength of IPs, then Nintendo is still king. Because Nintendo holds, like, the torch as far as, like, the strongest IPs that's out there in gaming.
Yeah,
you have
it's
Mario,
all about
you
innovation.
Have Zelda. And it's all, it's all about innovation.
Wait.
They could do, like, innovative things with those, like, particular brands. So.
Go ahead. Yeah.
You said the strongest, IP. So, to me, I feel like I understand where you come from because we all grew up on Mario. It has a special place in our heart. But
it's not even just that. It's the actual value of those IPs. Because if you look at the Universal Studios deal, for example, they're not going to make that with like Sony to make an Uncharted park. You know, they're doing that to make like a Mario and Zelda park because they know that those are the IPs that people grab onto who grew up on gaming and just know gaming in general.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm not denying that. Like that's great. But what I'm trying to tell you is in terms of IP strength. If your IP is truly that strong, then the Wii U, I don't think the Wii U would have been where it was if those IPs really held that strength. That's the first thing. Second thing is, for example, like Call of Duty is a stronger IP than anything that Nintendo has now.
I would totally disagree with that. It's
America.
But okay, listen. Call of Duty is a big seller, yes, but its quality has declined. Like they're running out of ideas.
They are running out of ideas. But that's because the franchise runs stagnant every year.
Wait. Let's stop right there.
Stopping. It's America. I can keep going if I.
Call of Duty has been number one for 8 years.
Yeah.
Sales, yes.
You're telling me Battlefield and Titanfall 2 aren't knocking at the door, though? Battlefield's back in a big way, and Titanfall kicks ass, too.
All of them is great.
Oh, man, he's getting mad. Sorry.
I'm saying,
They're all great.
I ended them. They're all great. Like, all of them. You can't be without them if you're a real gamer. You gotta have it all. Like, the point I'm trying to say is if you go to the store and somebody be like, yo, I want you got Mario or Call of Duty to go with, 9 times out of 10 in this day and age, they choosing Call of Duty from multiplayer to the story, the graphics, the impact, all of that. Mario is not winning over Call of Duty in this day and age. It's not happening.
Here's the thing. Nintendo's not going to change the way they do business. They've been doing business for several years the same way. They're not going to go and create a mature-rated Mario game just because it's what the market wants. They're going to do what works for them. And, Mario Odyssey will work for them. Legend of Zelda will work for them. I mean, it doesn't quite innovate with original IPs all over the place, but it is something. They are moving forward in design. They are moving forward with experiences that cater to the systems that they make. So, I mean, it works in their own way, and it's what makes Nintendo Nintendo.
I will say, though, I think they could do an M-rated Metroid. I think they could do
that. I would love to see that.
I would love to see that. But
where she just takes off her suit and takes a shower.
Why do you think... Let me ask y'all a question. Like, all of y'all. Here's the question, right? If y'all not willing to take risks and get out your comfort zone and do something different, then all you're going to do is be a part of the same rinse and repeat system and cycle, and it'll get you a good run for a short period of time. But after that, there's nothing left. You run out of steam fast. This is not a sprint. This is supposed to be a long, 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 drawn-out race to see who really makes it and who really survives. So think about it. Out of everything that Nintendo has been doing, from Wii Sports all the way to now and all this other stuff, we loved it. But we loved it for the moment. It was great in that moment. It made us feel good in that moment. But as we sit up here and talk today, does it affect us? Does the Wii still affect us like that? Does the Wii U still affect us like that?
Okay, okay. I'll be totally honest.
Let me
answer.
Let him go first.
I will be totally honest. You're right about that because I have my Wii U here. I'm staring at it as I'm speaking into the microphone. I haven't turned it on in months. And you're so, yeah, the Wii U was at first a brilliant console. But after 1 or 2 years, it just didn't do. Like, the amount of Wii U titles I own pale in comparison to all the other consoles that I own. They basically had nothing once third-party support left. And that's what killed the Wii U. Now, we'll see what happens with the Switch 1 or 2 years down the line. But they need to keep that trust in tow with these third-party companies.
Okay, one other thing, real quick, okay? With today's market, a lot of companies aren't willing to take risk. And it's a sad thing. It is a sad thing that we don't see a lot of companies take risks unless they're like indie games or something like that. And case in point, if you need an example of a company that isn't willing to sit out to see something new, just take a look at the cancellation of Microsoft's Scalebound. I rest my case. But, you know, it's the case. It's just the way the market is. People prefer familiar titles that they know will sell. We've just got to accept that. But by the same token, I still think, like I said, these developers are doing something with these ideas. So they're making them. It's just a matter of, like you said, finding something in the long term. And hopefully something like Breath of the Wild, we'll be talking about it 2 years from now. Same way we talk about Twilight Princess now. After all that time, it's been released.
And I did make the joke before the conference where it's like, watch Nintendo announce that they now have Scalebound. Imagine if they make that happen at E3.
I was making that joke before too, honestly. Like if they actually brought Scalebound.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. But so now moving forward, you know, because like I said, I'm going to get the Switch. I can't wait to play it and stuff like that. Now, the third-party support, that's the lifeline. That's the...
I have a long list of third-party support already.
So of the Nintendo right now. So what I want to ask you is this. I'm just going to throw some stuff out there, right?
All
right. Okay. This year alone, right now, stay with me. This year alone, Red Dead Redemption 2 is supposed to be coming this year. Mass Effect Andromeda coming this year, right? Call of Duty is going to come again. Mm-hmm. You already know that. Later this year.
Star Wars Battlefront.
Star Wars. Oh.
Yeah. Sorry. I stopped it cold.
You just touched a sensitive moment. I had a sensitive moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, baby, this is what we do. So, now that's just to name a few. There's a whole bunch of other, you know, third-party games that's going to come out. Now, there's a lot of third-party games that's not coming to Switch, like, already by default. That's not coming. But the ones that are coming, like NBA 2K18, who's going to buy NBA 2K18 on the Switch? Like, I'm just trying to, like...
Well, clearly those kids who are playing basketball, like, just outside, they brought it to their
that group of millennials right there will make the game worth its
But you have
to understand, I mean, there are people who are going to buy a Switch, and they're going to ask me, like, where are the sports experiences?
Here's the problem. Y'all missing the point. The point is this. If I go to the store, right, and I say, hey, y'all got NBA 2K18? They say, yeah. And they show it to me. First off, the moment they see what it looks like on PS4 Pro and Scorpio and all this other stuff, and then they see what it looks like on the Switch, they're going to switch their damn mind from the Switch and get it on the PS4, the Xbox, or PC, or whatever.
Well, not everybody's in that boat. Not everybody has a PS4 Pro or Xbox One. The choice is there for the people that only have the Switch.
Dude, there's over 20 million people that got Xbox One right now, and over 50 million. They got
He's going to explode. He's going to explode.
I quit. I quit.
No, 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 don't go to the podcast.
No. Don't go.
Good. Can we call this good. Like podcast like Switch Triggered? Like,
that's it. Like
change the title?
Perfect. No, hip hop. Listen, man. I appreciate you. You really do have this driven point to argue points. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. And you are on this upper level when all I'm trying to do is be like, look, I'm just trying to explain my point. Don't kill me. Don't do the 1-2 switch thing on me. But no, man, I appreciate your drive. I do. I'm just trying to make the point that, like, Nintendo didn't have the capital to get those third parties reserved in time for the Switch, and that is a loss. But by the same token, they could get the new Assassin's Creed. They could get, you know, like I said, exclusive third-party titles that would do well in this. Remember Wii and Boom Blocks? That was a big grab for them, even if the game kind of faded away and everything like that. But if they can get that kind of logic going again and talk to these companies, talk to EA, talk to 2K about making these experiences that would work for the Switch, that would be a benefit in their favor. They just need to understand how well it worked with Bayonetta 2 and how well it could work on the Switch. They just need to find that logic.
The problem right now is that Nintendo has kind of been playing third fiddle for a little too long at this point. Yeah. That's the primary reason why
they're
having trouble getting third-party support.
Yo, I'm going to give you a hug, son. I wish I could.
We'll do a Skype
not
hug.
Me?
Skype.
All right, I see how it is. No,
I'm sorry.
But, I mean, like, it's really, you know, it's really the fact that they've been playing third fiddle for so long, and, you know, I feel like a lot of that actually derives from the fact that they're doing this whole, crafted sense of exclusivity to them. And, you know, you saw, like, how quickly that the pre-orders ran out for the Nintendo Switch. Like, you can't get one right now online, basically. And I feel like that they're just doing that on, you know, by themselves, like, for whatever reason, to make it seem like that they're selling out and, like, to show, kind of show the investors, like, oh, look, like, we can't even keep up with the demand and everything. It's like, well, that's not a good thing. If you can't keep up with the demand, you're not going to be selling as much as you probably could be because of the strength of your name, because the fact you're Nintendo and the fact you have Mario and Zelda, and this is America, so, I mean, like,
America.
A hell of a lot more than what you are now, because you're not keeping up with the demand, and that's their problem. That's been their problem for the past number of years.
And it has. I mean, they've been so unprepared for the market, they didn't realize what the NES Classic could do for the market. And now, whenever it goes, people line up, like, at 4 in the morning to go get their NES Classic, and it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's like they need to catch up on that, and they needed to do that with the Switch, because now it's going to be a matter of, like, well, when are you going to get more Switch systems in stock? And
no one knows, except for Nintendo, and they're not telling, and that's the problem.
Now, here's another issue that I want to bring to y'all attention when it comes to Nintendo and their short-term vision instead of long-term vision, and I don't know who works there, but, like, now, before I say this, listen, I'm getting the Switch, period. The Zelda and the Mario alone was crazy. Arms look fun as hell and very addictive. I'm interested in seeing what's up with this HD Rumble. I'm hearing good things about that. Mm-hmm. They have some things working for them, but having things working for you for the moment, it's like being in a boxing match, right? When Shane Mosley was fighting Mayweather, right? In the first 2-3 rounds, it was a good fight, and Shane Mosley caught Mayweather, almost made him fall. And then every round after that, he got his ass whipped, lost like 3-9. So my thing is, what does it matter to have a good start if you have no plans on finishing strong? It doesn't make any sense, and that's been the problem. So not just to prove a point, but just to say something that if Nintendo did this, it would definitely work. First off, with Nintendo, now, I feel like they don't know their audience. And I know this sounds crazy, right? But I'm going to tell you why I feel like they don't know their audience. If you know your audience, you know that your audience from back in the day that has grown up would love to experience creations that matches their maturity now. Understand what I'm saying? Now, when Super Nintendo and Nintendo was extremely successful when they was on top, I remember when we brought Super Nintendo to play fighting games. Mortal Kombat on Super Nintendo was better than the Genesis version. Because
save
it was
the sweat.
You know what I'm saying?
Street Fighter 2.
Street Fighter 2 was better.
Street Fighter 2, the World Warrior. Like, Super Nintendo was Killer Instinct. Like, they had all these things. Now, here's my point. They still had the family-friendly stuff. They had everything else that made them who they are. But they didn't forget about the group of people that are mature. Now, the same problem that Nintendo has is the same problem that Xbox has, and they are one of the same but differently. I'm going to tell you why. With Nintendo, they marketed themselves as the family-friendly console, and because they marketed themselves that way and branded themselves that way, they put themselves in a box that now they can't get out of, which eliminated them from generating revenue from the highest selling type of games, because those type of games won't work with the message that Nintendo's trying to send as a family friendly platform. So
there are some exceptions to the rule. Like, we did see some titles last night that are pointing toward like a mature sort of thing. Where we saw Skyrim, we saw No More Heroes be confirmed, you know, stuff like that.
Shin Megami Tensei.
Got Fire Emblem. Just Gaia 5 Complete. I mean, there are some games out there that aren't just this is for a 5-year-old set.
No, you understand. I'm not talking about just fantasy violence and colors and dragons and first of all, who the hell's gonna get Skyrim? But Skyrim is that's a whole nother.
I know Jessica Chobo is gonna get it.
Do you know how many people would love to play Skyrim on the go? There'd be a lot of people who wants to play Skyrim on the go.
Hold up. People are acting like PC doesn't exist. If you want to play Skyrim on the go, everybody got their laptops with them when they go and play. They take it out.
Can you pull your laptop out while you're walking the street and such? No, not.
You're totally gonna get mugged in your laptop.
You're gonna get mugged with your Switch too.
If you're walking down the street and you're playing a game, that's a bad thing. You wonder why? Because you walk into the street.
You're gonna have a bad.
Damn it, Karen.
You're walking down the street with your Switch. You're going to have a bad time. I'm going to say that right now.
Girls won't speak to you. You're going to get lost in the city, like Mario.
It doesn't make any sense. Like that doesn't make any sense. And then also to relate that idea to what Xbox is. Xbox, ever since they came out with so many shooters and they worked so well, the controller's great, the triggers, everything like that, it got labeled and branded as the shooter system. So every time you see Microsoft try to attempt to do something different and out of the norm, it's not accepted because they labeled themselves at the shooter system. So when you see shooters come over there, like it fits. The marketing, everything is great. Anything else, it's like I don't look at Xbox for that. Sony, you look at Sony for everything because they themselves in a position to be accepted from any and all types of gamers, and their variety and consistency of different games because of the risk that they take. Like, you're not gonna see Heavy Rain anywhere else. They took a risk on that and won. So because they did that, everything is accepted when Sony puts out anything. So it puts them in a position to win every time, which makes sense. So when you look at all of these things, Nintendo right now has to take a risk, and their risk is to get out of the family, like little kid idea of Minecraft world and go and do other things to get everybody back on board.
But I think they're working on that. Hold on. Now, if I might put in my two cents, they are kind of working on that. They got the JRPG market with the Dragon Quest games, Tensei. They got that. They're working on getting more of the mature-rated style games like Assassin's Creed, stuff like that, Skyrim, stuff like that. They're doing stuff for the nostalgia crowd.
And who's to say, like,
Super Bomberman
like
R, Ultra Street Fighter 2. Ultra Street Fighter 2. They're bringing back a 25-year-old game with adding new fighters to that instead of bringing over something like Street Fighter 5. That's a novel idea, because right now you can't play Ultra Street Fighter 2 anywhere else. I'm just saying there are some ideas that are working out for them, but obviously it takes time. It took time for the Xbox 360 to build into the shooter champion. It didn't become the shooter champion overnight. It took forever for the Call of Duty franchise to build up and Modern Warfare to establish it as the shooter system. I mean, it is a footprint. It is a footprint on the journey. Where Nintendo goes from here is up to Nintendo. But I think it is a good first step. They've got the kind of mixture in titles, casual hits, a reliable Wii U franchises that are coming over, new Mario, new Zelda, JRPGs. They have all the bases covered now. It's just a matter of making sure those bases stay covered while moving forward with new ideas, like I said, with third parties within their own companies to cater to all types of gamers. I think they can do it. And I'm not freaking out here. I'm not going like, let me tell you something about gamers. This is America.
Let me tell you something.
This is America.
What you gonna do, brother?
You feel me though. You feel me exactly. Ripping off my shirt as we speak.
Workman's got the Macho Man glasses.
You see where I'm talking about though. You see what I'm talking about.
I see exactly what you're saying. Yeah. And I'm not saying that you're wrong. The only thing what I'm trying to say is that everything you said just now, everything you said is something that was already said when Wii U came out day one. So yeah. what I'm trying to tell you is I hear what you're saying and I get it, but the same thing that you're saying was said before.
I know, but I think they've learned their lesson from the Wii U.
You see, I feel like with the Wii U,
this time around, I think they understand it now. What didn't work in the Wii U's favor? What I mean, obviously, new Super Mario Brothers U is not going to be nowhere near the experience that Super Mario Odyssey is. Oh, I think they learned their lesson.
Right, they learned a lesson. From
now it's just a matter of how they apply those lessons, or if they fall into the same old traps that they did with, you know, the Wii U.
I mean, okay. it's a little different too, because you're looking at like Super Mario Brothers U is kind of going back to the 2D style, like you know, of like gameplay with like past mm-hmm. Mario games, where you have like Super Mario Odyssey, which is
Super Mario it's
kind of like a continuation from like Super Mario Galaxy in that sense. But to go into the you know, just kind of real quick to kind of go into like the marketing and the message of like Nintendo Switch. I mean, you can see like right, you know, clear as day, like from that first trailer that they revealed, that they're kind of getting away from like the family friendly, like family kind of gets together on the couch playing video games together. It's not that anymore. It's like for your, you know, it's for your millennials, basically kind of going out there and like they're traveling and they want to take their gaming experiences on the go. And like Nintendo, you know, kind of like recognizes that, you know, finally, eventually, with people use like smartphones and things like that in order to, you know, get their gaming fix on now.
Right.
And that's especially the case in Japan. Like if you look in Japan, like, you know, like mobile gaming is ridiculous.
Mobile gaming is ridiculous. Yes. Yeah. It's crazy over there. So I feel that Nintendo, this first year is going to be extremely, extremely tough. And I feel like if they stick to their guns, you know, everything would be great. I don't think it's smart that they didn't have a game bundle with their system.
That's true.
I could actually agree with you on that one.
I don't think that was smart.
They also have to get like the consoles like actually in the shelves in order to do that too. But
but the reason why I say that is because like I said, like for $300, right? You're gonna go to the store, gonna spend $300 on it, right? And then by the time you get the system and you get the Zelda game, you're gonna play it, you're gonna love it, it's gonna be great, you're gonna have a good experience, right? But then think about this, right? I just want y'all to think about this. It comes out March 3rd. You got Horizon coming, you got Mass Effect coming, you got all these other games coming. So when you get your Switch and you play Legend of Zelda, because that's, I'm assuming, going to be the highest selling.
One-to-one seller.
By far.
So once everybody get over that and they play that and they like it, then there's going to be a ton of games that's coming out that everybody has been waiting for since last year and even the year before that's not going to be on the Switch, and they're going to use that money and invest in those games on systems that they already have. Now, what I want to ask you is, because of that, you know, with the Mass Effects and Assassin's Creed and everything that we was talking about, because of all of that, do you think that Nintendo's gonna have a big halt on demand until Mario comes?
I mean, that's kind of the million-dollar question, honestly.
Yeah, it is. It's just a matter of what they learned from the distribution of their NES Classic. Because, I mean, getting the Switch into as many hands as possible, that's the biggest thing they need to focus on.
That is the key. Absolutely. And that's exactly what, you know, what Sony did right, honestly, is the fact that, you know, kind of go back to the Sony, is that the fact that they, you know, made sure that, the, you know, that you could get your hands on the PS4 no matter, you know, when, like, in the life cycle of the console.
Right.
Same with the Xbox One, too, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure.
They did a good job getting it out.
Because of the PS4's like messaging and like how positive it was for like hardcore gamers and everything, it had more, you know, more support for that. So because they were able to keep the supply up and the demand was already up there too, they were able to match that and get enough consoles out there where now they're basically dominating this console generation. Nintendo needs to kind of learn from that. They need to kind of take a page from that and actually not pull the bullshit that they've been doing like in the past where they just don't have enough units. Because, you know, we were talking about this on the Arcast actually, Evan, like with you know, in terms of like Nintendo not having enough NES Classic editions out there.
They
should be having these like in every like checkout, you know, stand and Walmart and across the country, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's just a matter of them learning from their mistakes and making the supply outweighed the demand. I mean, they want to make sure they have more than enough systems out there. I mean, that wasn't the problem with the Wii U. I mean, you can find an 8-gig one and not give a flying. You couldn't give it to. Well, you could give it to me and I'd sell it for $20. But you know, it's just a matter, it's a matter of making sure that the supply is there. And I really hope they learn their lesson from the NES Classic. I hope they're ready for when Super Mario Odyssey comes out and all these other games come out, and they are prepared for it. It's just a matter of how driven they are. How driven they are and how different they are from the Nintendo back in 2012 that introduced the Wii U. It's going to be 5 years later, and it's going to be a matter of did they learn their lessons and how are they applying them. And so far, like I said, I think the footprint is good in space, and now it's just a matter of seeing if they move forward.
Exactly.
Quick,
mic drop.
Sorry, really quick thing I want to mention, too, is that if you have a Wii U or if a Wii U is available to you, pick one up, and you can still play Zelda Breath of the Wild, just an FYI.
Read my mind. And that's the thing. That's another thing I was going to say. Like, even though Zelda is coming out on a Switch, and I didn't see, I didn't play the game, but I'm assuming that the Switch version looks better. You know what I'm saying?
It does. You know, it's sort of like the port of Twilight Princess on GameCube compared to the, well, no, they actually look the same. The Wii version was just had the motion controls.
Mm. Right. So my thing is this. Because so many people got the PS4, so many people got Xbox One, but they want to play Zelda. They don't need a Switch to play Zelda. And here's the point that I want to make. You have a lot of people that will probably save their money and wait for Mario to come out and play Zelda now on their Wii U that they don't even use.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that happens in abundance, then what happens to the Switch? Because the Zelda is the game. The units. And if people be like, well, shit, I don't got to spend this much money to play this. I could spend $60 instead of spending damn near $380.
Well,
you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's a big question right there. Like,
well, think about, too, the fact that you can't really buy a Wii U these days, too. So those that were kind of
They're taking off the shelves.
Yeah, they're taking it off the shelves. So those that were waiting for to play Zelda.
That's a good point.
Zelda.
Yeah.
Good point.
And besides, us hardcore ones will probably get it for both systems anyway, so we can play Zelda on the go and then play it comfortably at home.
Mm.
Well, technically, you can't play it both with the Switch.
Yeah, you can
play it
both with the Switch.
I'm just saying, you don't... Yeah. I mean, we're not telling you, if you don't want to get the Switch, you don't have to get the Switch. We're just trying to argue that there is stuff coming for the Switch that is pretty awesome. And we should get to the games at some point, because these were pretty big part of last night's presentation, too.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to make sure that, you know, so hip-hop gamers calm, so I don't, like, mention Super Bomberman. Oh, yo, Super Bomberman!
Good. So now let's get to the games. Let's break it down like this. The first thing they show, like the whole 1-2 switch thing. Do y'all feel like that's a gimmick or that's something that's going to be?
But I think it could be fun for parties.
I wanted Wild Gunman. It looked like Wild Gunman for a minute. I was like, oh God, they're bringing back Wild Gunman. This is going to be awesome. And it's 1-2 switch. I'm probably not going to get it because it looks. What are you going to do? Wii Sports. Well, you know, like, it does look cheesy. Like, Wii Sports, I'm going to kill you at bowling. 1-2 Switch, I'm just going to kill you.
Yeah, it's like,
not the same.
Do you not look into their eyes? I don't really want to look into my homeboy eyes.
Yeah, look at your opponent. I said, look at your opponent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't look at the screen. You look right in your, like,
so I'm looking
eyes.
At my grandma, and my grandma wants to lay waste to me. Oh, happy Christmas.
Family fun. Yeah,
like, With a couple drinks in you, that game could be fun.
Yeah. Oh, I got your beady eyes right here.
You're going to want to buy another Switch after you get broke from a fight.
Let's talk about the second game. Let's talk about ARMS. From what I'm hearing about ARMS.
I would love to play that one. That one would look hot.
It looks like a beefed up
Punch Out of sorts.
Next generation Punch Out Madness game, but it looks more fun than I was giving it credit for.
It's like Punch Out beats like Bionic Commando in a while.
Right. What are they going to call the sequel? Legs? Butt?
I know. Yeah. It's kind of a dumb name, to be honest. It really is a dumb name.
Yeah. It is, but it's cool. I like the idea of all that, and I wanted to see more original games like that. But, I mean, it is kind of cool, like everything else that was announced. Obviously, Splatoon 2. A lot of people think it's too soon for a sequel, but come on. The original sold so well, might as well evolutionized.
Yeah, and that was kind of like a big deal too. Like at first, like, you know, like a lot of people saw that Splatoon was going to be on the Switch, and we all figured it was going to be like a remastered, like Splatoon. I had no idea it was going to be like a complete sequel. So, you know, that'll be good to see, and they'll be see like how much different it's going to be from the first game.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. So Splatoon 2 is good. Ultra Street Fighter 2. That's another one.
I mean, people are like, well, that's just Street Fighter 2 HD all over again. I'm like, no. They're adding a couple new fighters, and they had the option to play between the old version and the new HD version.
I like that.
I like that. That's what works so well with the NES Classic. I want to play in CRT mode. But let me also mention one other significant little thing here. Sonic Mania, if it makes launch, it will be the first time ever a Sonic game has launched on a Nintendo console. I mean, during its launch period. It's weird. Yeah. But back to the major games. Another one, Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I knew there was a Xenoblade.
I gotta get that. Gotta get that.
Fire Emblem Warriors. I love the fact it's not Hyrule 2. I love Hyrule Warriors, but I want to see something different, and Fire Emblem is the way to go. And I love that idea.
It's amazing when it comes to those one man versus 100 people, and those 100 people just don't have a chance.
Well, that's just because they run at you. They barely even strike. Be like, I'm just going to run up. Oh, I'm dead.
And obviously
you have like the smaller titles. We're talking Super Bomberman R. I am thrilled Bomberman is back.
I was very surprised, shocked
because Konami is Konami, and Konami can sometimes be.
it's Konami, and who cares?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this on our show, Robert, about Bomberman, like how we never thought we would ever see like a new Bomberman just because of the way Konami has been lately. But I mean, like, it's cool to see that, but at the same time, a little hesitant to, like, as far as like how it's running, because I've been hearing reports.
At least it's not Act Zero.
It's not running too well.
Yeah. Now my thing is performance. And when I mean by performance, I'm talking about what it's going to be like when you're playing it on your TV as opposed to what it's going to be like playing on the go. Because on the go, the resolution is 720p, which is fine. You know, that's cool. But my thing is, I also heard that because it's not on the dock, there will be a performance hit. So
I don't think it'll be that bad. I've seen a couple of demonstrations in which they showed off Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which is far more complex than Bomberman, and it was almost perfectly seamless. You know, like, you played it, and then you snapped into the system, then you're playing on the TV like nothing happened. It looks pretty smooth. But I don't know if third parties can do that. But from what I've seen, the tech is pretty easy to utilize with that way.
I mean, from what Nintendo stated, like, it's going to be 1080p in the dock and 720 off the dock, and that's basically just all they said about it.
But it's pretty nice. And I'll tell you, another title, this surprised me because it's been a big hit in Japan like forever, and Sega wasn't ready to give it a chance here until, I guess, it was ready. Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Yes! I was so excited about that.
That was cool. They're both great puzzle games, and seeing them together is really cool. So, and then obviously we have the titles that are obvious for the system. You know, FIFA, NBA 2K18, Rayman Legends Definitive Edition, Steep.
Dragon Ball Z is coming.
Dragon Ball Z is coming. Skylanders, Imaginators, which makes no sense. Because that series is kind of the way out the door.
All right, what about the most
important? Dragon Quest.
What about the most important one? The return of Travis Touchdown. When Sudiko Ichi showed up on stage, I went, fuck yeah!
I felt so bad for that translator, though.
He was so bad.
Because Suda is like this ball of energy, and the guy translating was just the complete opposite.
I can't keep up with them.
This guy's too awesome. I cannot compare with this awesome guy.
You can say by sitting on the toilet. It's fun. But no, I mean, aside from that, you know, like the Dragon Quest games, like, you know what? Heroes 1 and 2, you got Dragon Quest 10, Dragon Quest 11. I mean, right there, the return of Square Enix to a Nintendo console.
And Project Octopath.
But of course, they developed before. Still, it's like, it's a big return for them in terms of Dragon Quest. We aren't getting a Final Fantasy game, but this is a step in the right direction.
Now, there's one issue that I have, and I think this is going to be a big thing because this is a part of their marketing. But they're marketing, you know, you can play with your friends, you do all this other stuff, you know, that's cool. But, like, the peripherals, like, in terms of the prices of, you know, the Joy-Cons and all this other stuff, like, I'm not sure how many people is going to invest in, like, all of this extra equipment for Nintendo Switch. And the reason why I say that is because people, I think, are going to be a bit more hesitant to invest a lot to get involved in a Switch based on past Nintendo releases. Think about it like this. Think about the people that jumped on the Wii U and invested so much in it to not use it really at all.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem with the Wii U, it wasn't really designed the right way when it came to, like, doing the motion. Like, I remember playing Batman Arkham City on it, and you had to, like, wave around this big pad to do the detective mode shit, and I got really annoyed by it. But you know, with the Switch, we were talking about this a little earlier. I can understand why it's so high priced. There's a lot built into those Joy-Cons, and unfortunately, that doesn't come cheap. But with the higher price, I think we get the higher quality. And I take a look at the Xbox One Elite controller. Yes. $150 on the market, $200 for the Gears of War model, but it's one of the best damn built controllers out there. And you can
absolutely experience
the Joy-Con. You can move around different configurations however you see fit and find something that, you know, on a good comfort level. How many times can you do that with a PS4 DualShock pad?
Yeah, you can't really do that.
It's one unit.
I know, but my thing is, you know, like, is it even, you know, like, needed? Like, sometimes I feel like, and this is the whole thing that I want to say before we get back into, you know, discussing all the games.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, looking at what Nintendo is doing, I love when companies are trying to be different and trying to be innovative and creative. But sometimes I feel like you could be so different to where it's actually working against you.
It depends.
You have to be realistic too.
I think functionality is king here. You could do a lot with one controller. I mean, you could take the two mini controllers, and there you go. You're set to take on a match of Street Fighter without needing to get a $90 controller. And I think Nintendo's also learned from the past what peripherals work, what don't. I mean, do I really want to spend $80 on what looks like a toy bazooka shooting at stuff in the back of Yoshi's head?
Super NES? That was so strange.
You know, like, and that activator for Sega Genesis. What? Garbage. $100 for that. So I think they learned their lesson in terms of making something that's more practical. It doesn't mean everybody's going to buy into it, obviously, but the option's there. And the fact that you can get two-player experiences out of a single controller that's already included with the system is pretty nice. It is a neat idea. And like I said, I think it's just a matter of adapting, seeing what goes into that tech. I think the controllers will do pretty good. They won't sell, like, you know, one-to-one with the system. Oh, I need this extra controller, or I need this extra pro controller. But it'll be a matter of, I can see why the tech is priced like that. Because, you know, it has the motion sensors built in. It has the functionality built in to work in all these different configurations. I mean, there is an answer to it. I mean, it sucks that it has to be so high priced, but that's the way the market is.
My thing is, but in terms of the controller itself and the technology in it, that joint is fire. Like I said, the HD Rumble, I'm like, yo, I gotta play it. Like, I have to. Like, I really need to see where this is going. So I'm all for it. I'm loving it. My thing is, in terms of just the general, like, gamer. See, here's what I think Nintendo gotta worry about. Because of the time frame that they're coming out, right? You're coming out at a time where Xbox and PlayStation is in their stride. See, when a system comes out, it's going to take developers a little time to really get deep into what these systems can do. Mm-hmm. This year is the year where developers that's been working on PlayStation and Xbox is in they in their groove now. Like, it's been a few years. So,
and this is like what, like, Nintendo's been doing for a while now. Like, they've just kind of, like, just pushing their, like, new hardware, like, in the middle of, like, other hardware's, like, development cycle. And with their actual, like, life cycle, I should say. And that's just, you know, they just kind of just feel that confident, I guess, like, in their own, you know, hardware, and, you know, as well, I guess, like, they, you know, that they should, because they do have their, you know, their they're, like, main supporters and everything, kind of, like, helping, you know, push them along. Yeah. But at the same time, it throws a lot of the developers out for a loop sometimes. And, like, that's where, again, we're kind of talking about, like, with where that long-term support is going to be for third party.
And I think they're working closely with those third parties to make sure that they understand what the control schemes are all about. You know, it's can the HD Rumble work really well and present Skyrim in a new light? Maybe. We might be able to follow that.
Oh, man, imagine playing that with the...
I think that, like, you could feel what, like, the fire, or you could feel like you did this. Like,
feel the fire. I'm burning.
You know what I mean? Like, let's say the controller heats up when you have a fire spell.
That'd be great.
Oh my god,
hands are so clammy.
let's say a massage, like how you have a heating pad or something like that. Let's say these things happen. That's crazy. Like, that's worth. You know, that's what I mean. Like, taking what you got and maximizing the attention and the effect that it has. So, it's not a gimmick. It's something that you really would need as a gamer. That's all I'm saying from a marketing standpoint.
I mean,
I get you. Got you.
They're basically going to be used as like kind of like next gen Wiimotes in a lot of ways. And like I was actually noticing this too, like where I don't think like a lot of people kind of caught on, like in that Ultra Street Fighter 2 trailer at the very end. There's a quick clip. If you like actually pause the video, you see in first person Ryu throwing like a Hadouken at like an M. Bison soldier, basically. I believe that's going to be like a mini game, basically. Like think of like the you know, like with the destroying the car or the barrels
that
coming out or whatever.
Be crazy.
They're going to do a first person, like throw as many Hadoukens as you can or something like that. But it's all a first person use. Of the like, that's
David
that's
just waving his look rounds arm like crazy. Hadouken,
I would do it. Hell, I'd be all for that.
I'll do that.
So yeah, I think developers will get the idea of what works. And you know, they don't really need to convert to different systems either. I mean, the way that the Joy-Cons are built into that controller, it does feel like a little bit widened Xbox One controller. Now, I'm not sure about the shoulder button functionality because I haven't read too much into that yet. But I mean, at least it's a start. It's compared to, say, like, you know, the Wii U and its wide hold and everything like that, and getting used to holding a friggin' tablet in your hands.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, let's get to the possibility of like a full backwards compatibility with like the Nintendo generations. Like, and what I mean by that is, I know GameCube's supposed to work with it. I think it'd be dope if, like, you know, if the interface, like, you know, the actual UI on the Nintendo Switch when you get it home and stuff like that, it'd be dope if they had a way where you could just access Super Nintendo and Nintendo games. I know they got the you know, the WiiWare store and all this other stuff, but yeah. I feel like for the Switch, it'd be amazing if you could like switch different eras. Nintendo games on your Switch. And
so you kind of like
set it to Nintendo mode. Set it to Super Nintendo mode.
We got something like that. I mean, the online services, like they said, we are getting one NES and one Super NES game that are going to be available on the service, and they're going to have online play embedded into them, which is a feature that we've been wanting for like a lot of these different games. You know, like imagine playing Super Tennis again online against other people. It'd be the first time to be hot fire since like Virtua Tennis, you know? But I think that's going to be the beginning of it. I think they are trying to experiment of what kind of classic game services they can offer on there. They didn't say anything about GameCube, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. They registered a trademark with Eternal Darkness. I mean, it's just a matter of how they get it started. In March, we're going to see like the beginning of that. But by the time E3 rolls around, they may introduce like a whole network that's going to be part of that monthly subscription. And that would, as hip hop would say, make it hot fire. Right. Obviously. Yeah.
I mean, we still need to kind of like hear about like what the virtual console is going to be like on the Switch, but I mean, it sounds like it could be something very similar to that for sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's a big part of their company. Look at the NES Classic. I mean, if that is not a lesson that retro still strikes with this crowd, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Yes,
definitely.
Absolutely.
So now, moving on to some more topics with Nintendo, the next thing to me, like, they do have a lot of other franchises, like you were talking about, like with Metroid, Star Fox, and all these other things that they could do. What I want to ask you is, do you feel that these IPs still hold the same weight that they did back in the day in comparison to the impact of new games that we've been able to experience over the years, such as like the impact that The Last of Us is having on people? The impact of hearing that we have a remake of Final Fantasy VII coming, you know, like the impact of the new games that we're experiencing now going forward, you know, even Doom, Fallout 4, like these games was heavily impactful. So what I want to ask you is, because what's the name? Well, I can't think of his name. The dude that made Fallout. Todd Howard. Yeah. So when he announced that Skyrim was coming, my thing is, if Skyrim does have success on the Switch, it could lead to other support, you know, from Bethesda. But what I want to ask you is, do you feel that those games would help to be driving forces for the success of Nintendo Switch, or will it still remain major successes for PS4 and Xbox and PC, and Nintendo is just there? Like, you know what I'm saying? I think, I want to know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, it won't be a driving force, I can tell you that. It won't be a driving force, but it's just kind of like, I think Bethesda's, like, goodwill as far as, like, wanting to work with Nintendo, because I think they do have, like, a good relationship despite not really being able to, business-wise, make it kind of work between the two. But like now, because that this is like basically a fresh start for Nintendo, and they are, you know, again, changing their messaging and, like, you know, making, you know, the Switch kind of, like, you know, for the sake of the pun, that the Bethesda kind of, like, sees this as an opportunity. It's like, okay, we can bring this, you know, Skyrim over, and, you know, who knows, maybe if it does well, we'll bring, like, you know, Fallout 4 over, maybe we'll bring Fallout, Fallout Shelter, over. Yeah. I could see them doing, like, a Switch version of that as well.
And you make the good point about them, like, initially not being able to work with one another. Because I remember a couple of years ago at E3, it was, like, the first E3 when they did a presentation, when Bethesda did a presentation. And they made the point where they made a jab at Nintendo about their being, at least we don't have, like, a gimmick, like, two screens and such. And that was a jab at Nintendo on the Wii U. However, couple days later, I'm on the floor of E3. I'm over at Bayonetta 2. Who's there? All the people from Bethesda, and they're like, and their eyes and mouths are, like, dropping the sight of Bayonetta 2. And I was like, oh shit, we kind of fucked up with that wording. How can we apologize to them?
I wouldn't take that, like, too hard, honestly, like, with what they say on stage. That's more like just friendly banter more than anything.
Definitely. They ain't that serious. But now I got a question for you. Bayonetta 3, will we see it on a Switch as an exclusive?
Now Scalebound's in the trash. You know, Platinum's got to work on something. So I think what will happen is we'll see it like this. They'll do exactly like they did with the Wii U. We'll see Bayonetta 1 and 2 in some sort of package for a very cheap price and everything like that, building up to Bayonetta 3 in probably 2 or 3 years' time. Which would work, because a lot of people missed Bayonetta 2 on the Wii U, and it is, I believe,
amazing.
One of the best games on that system.
Included.
I think bringing it to the Switch in one form or another
would be smart.
An incredible move. And
the only reason why it really didn't, it was a critical hit. But the reason why it didn't sell, because people were stubborn.
It's on the Wii U.
I don't want to play it on there.
Nintendo is listening. So I believe now that, you know, Platinum is freed up, then all they have in their plate now is Nier Automata and a couple other projects, they will talk to Nintendo, because they are very close with Nintendo. I mean, they really are. So it's a matter of time, you know, and Nintendo is listening. You know, like I said, Reggie is aware we want Mother 3. Reggie is aware that we want Metroid. It's just a matter of making sure it fits into the time frame so they're not rushed like Metroid Other M was. God help us. You know,
I actually like that game.
I mean, Super Smash Brothers took its time to come to the Wii U and the 3DS, but it was worth it. You know, it's a matter of making sure the franchises are done well enough and paced out well enough. You know, like, a lot of people are pissed that Mario Odyssey is not launching at the same time as Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. But let me ask you a question.
Why would you want that? No.
Yeah, why would you want that? Having two big experiences like that, conflict with one, that's why I'm not bitching and moaning about the launch lineup. There's only like four or five games to launch on. But you're going to play Zelda. Yeah, you're just going to play Zelda. That's all you're going to play.
They got some good launch lineups. Like, they got a good launch lineup.
Because you know what will happen if you had Super Mario Odyssey and Zelda launching at the same time? You'd have another Battlefield 1, Titanfall 2 situation.
Exactly. And that's what you don't want.
You want to cannibalize
too much too soon. You want to pace this out. That's why. Well, look at what we got. Okay, we got Legend of Zelda in March. We got Mario Kart 8 Deluxe at the end of April. We got Splatoon 2 in summer. We got Super Mario Odyssey in the fall, and then whatever else they announce at E3 to pace themselves over the next year. And the next year, it's a smart move, because it not only allows people to actually, I don't know, take the time to enjoy games and shit, but it also gives third developers time to fill in the gaps with their titles, and, you know, get into those as well. It's a smart move, you know, and I think Nintendo pacing themselves out, not announcing Pokemon, not announcing Smash, that all these people wanted. I mean, like, guys,
it's coming. It's coming.
But here's
what I want to ask you, right? So, you know, E3 is coming, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. And, now, here's my thing. This year's E3 is going to be very weird. It's going to be very weird, because with the Scorpio showing a face, the new announcements that Nintendo is going to have to support the movement of the Switch, And now that the PS4 Pro is out there, we're probably going to finally see gameplay of The Last of Us 2 for the first time. We're probably going to see
God of War. God of War.
Don't say that yet, like, because
it's gonna happen.
Because like, God of War is the thing that's gonna make me grow a third titty.
Like, the trailer didn't do that enough already.
That
game just don't make no goddamn sense. God forgive me for saying God and damn, but but anyway, that's another conversation. But the point is, E3 to me is gonna be the stage and the time for Nintendo to reissue their strength in their message. It's going to be very important.
I don't think they're going to show up at all, honestly, because they haven't showed up at E3 for a while.
No. Let's talk about last year. They had one game. They had one game in a closed booth, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. They had one game. Yep. And what happened? They were the freaking talk of the show. How did you see their boot? Did you play their game and everything like that?
If they can have that kind of momentum. I didn't get to play the game, though.
But still, if you have that kind of momentum, if you have that kind of buzz, hey, we've got Smash Brothers back here, but we're doing this thing where you have to get in this line or get in this line or whatever to see it. You know, if they do that sort of momentum thing instead of just doing, you know, 50 littered units of this and that, or, you know, one thing of Star Fox Zero when everybody wants to play it. What the hell? You know, you want to make sure that you have the right momentum and the right setup. And I think they learned from Breath of the Wild last year. I think they will have it. Now, they will not bring back their press conference. They're going to do that whole, you know, online
the treehouse thing.
Whatever.
Oh, no, you never know. They could change your mind. I mean, keep in mind that this presentation they just had was all live and everything, too.
Yeah, I'm just saying, they have like no reason to
do E3. As long as they don't bring back Nintendo Land, get out of here.
They have no reason to do E3, just like how Rockstar has no reason to do E3, because they can do like their own messaging outside of those conferences.
But I think they will have something in their booth, and they will do like they did last year and build that momentum. I mean, the way they did that with one game last year, can you imagine if Sony only had, like, say, God of War at their booth? What kind of impact would that have, especially with everybody else that wanted to see something else at their booth? They can't do that. Nintendo, though, pulled it off.
Yeah, well, that just kind of shows, like, the, you know, again, like, the strength of like, Nintendo's, like, game branding, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, think that's the momentum that's going to help them with the Switch. They just need to be smart about it and not introduce Nintendo Land 2. Don't.
we'll also kind of, like, learn their lesson again from, like, Wii U and, like, actually have, like, a good number of games coming out throughout the year as opposed to, like, you know, having these gluts, like, throughout the year where, like, there's just no games coming out.
Right.
Give me my F-Zero.
Listen. I did want to bring that up because I know you're not going to get your F-Zero, but Shinen, the guys who made Fast Racing Nero,
Fast RMX.
That's good.
Which is amazing. I love Fast Racing Neo on the Wii U. That was one of my favorite racing games from last year. It was so much fun. Anyway, go ahead, Hip Hop. You got something to say?
Yeah, so the next thing I want to say is, and Nintendo might not even care about it, but because they don't care about it doesn't mean they shouldn't. Esports is beyond huge. And to prove my point, esports is giving games new life. Like, I don't think Overwatch would be as big as it is if it wasn't for an esports platform existing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look at, you know, League of Legends, and as great as those games are, they would not be what they are today if it wasn't for these esports platforms. Like, you understand what I'm saying? It's like, you know, it's something that you just can't overlook. What I want to ask you is, when they do announce a Smash Brothers and all this other stuff, do you feel that Nintendo would be smart enough to utilize their new online service that we're going to get a chance to experience, but to utilize this online service to do something beyond the norm and get involved with esports or create something?
You know, they did bring back the Nintendo World Championships the last couple of years.
And they're going to bring it back again at E3, I believe. But here's one thing to consider. In the trailer that they revealed last October, they could have loaded up with kids inside the giant U again and made it look stupid and make us want to roll it off a hill. But no, they didn't do that. They focused. I'm seriously, I was sick of that big U. I was like, what the hell are you doing? But no, they showed a segment in that trailer besides the millennials and Karen. Damn it, Karen. They showed a group of guys, or, you know, a bunch of different people sitting down and playing Splatoon on their little monitors and everything like that before going out to an esports stage. Mm-hmm. I think they understand the big potential of esports. Let's understand. For the longest time, Nintendo, we don't want you playing Super Smash Brothers at your tournament. We don't want it. Now, please play it. You know, now they've just changed their tune like a complete 180.
It's the same deal too with with YouTubers and everything, and like, you know, trying to cut into the action of YouTubers too.
Hip hop, they shut them out, and then Mario Kart 8 got added in functionality.
You know that very well.
I know about that because I had to like pretty much fight Capcom and other companies. I'm like, I didn't even use your footage in this particular video, and you shutting me down. Like, yo, it was crazy. I'm like, you got it.
The same thing.
I'm helping y'all. Yeah. You'll say, like, yo, it was crazy.
But I think Nintendo's under the realization now that esports is important. I think hopefully with this whole sharing thing of screenshots and videos, they'll understand the importance of YouTube as well and maybe not be so greedy on the Let's Play bullshit that they've been on for the past few years. I think they're finally starting to loosen up and understand the importance of, and they're trying, I think they're trying to play catch up. In a way, they're trying to play catch up with these markets, but it's something. It's accessibility. It's understanding the markets. It's getting somewhere. Will Splatoon be as big as Overwatch? Hell no. But will it be something that's maybe a part of the Nintendo World Championships in a way?
Yeah.
Or something that's set up in its own groove when Splatoon 2 comes out? I think they'll find that. Because look at how crazy the World Championships have become again after the past couple of years. It's been nuts.
Honestly, right. you're more likely to go... You're likely going to see like more of like that kind of scenario like for Super Smash Brothers as opposed to Splatoon, like, you know, honestly. It will be interesting to see, and like it is good to see that they are, you know, that the Nintendo is actually pursuing like more of like with like YouTubers and with like other influencers basically, like who have in the past like, you know, been using like, you know, Nintendo footage, and Nintendo kind of goes after them, kind of monetize it themselves.
Oh yeah, we talk about how they went after Nintendo fan projects too.
Exactly. But even with this Treehouse event that was happening earlier today, like actually having people like, you know, say like Pro Jared or like MatPat from Game Theories or whatever, like, you know, actually having these people like at the event there and like showing them like during like streams and everything, the show is like, hey, we're for you, we're for the community. You like these guys, so you're like us, right? And it's kind of like,
And then last night, didn't they allow us to like, you know, co-stream the whole presentation without yelling at us?
Yeah, through Twitch.
That was the first.
See, here's my problem, right? Here's my problem. And this is like one of my issues. You know, with Nintendo, considering who Nintendo is as a former leader of the game, like culture and stuff like that. So, and, I mean, they're still a leader, but when I mean, I'm talking about, you know, they're not what they was, like, you know what I'm saying, in terms of positioning. Now, what bothers me is a company like that, that come from the 80s, like, you know what I'm saying, that understand the heart and soul of what gaming is at the purest. Why is it you put yourselves in a position of catch-up in the first place? And this brings me back to what we talked about in the beginning of this podcast. The reason why Wii U and Wii and all this other stuff started falling off and stuff like that. Because they're always playing catch-up. And that right there is a problem. You can't be a leader playing catch-up. You have to do something where you're the one leading the way and make PlayStation catch-up. Make Xbox catch-up. And that's the problem that I have. So, yeah, they got the cool YouTubers there and all this other stuff there. But the problem is, they're there not to be a part of what gaming is. They're there because they're at their last legs. Let me tell y'all something. I'm not sure if y'all heard this before, because I was actually saving this because I'm working on an article about it, but I'd rather just throw it out
here.
Shots fired. Let's hear it.
All right, so I'll just throw it out here. So I work with a lot of people in the gaming industry and outside the gaming industry now. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing a lot of stuff. I'm so blessed, right? Yeah. Now, I heard something which is powerful. One of the main reasons why Mario went to mobile, one of the main reasons was they was getting prepared to see what the mobile market would be like and how they would receive Nintendo games in case this is actually their last system and they will move their software to mobile and keep their handheld device alive and leave the console, traditional console business alone completely. The reason why this was, is because even though Nintendo has a lot of money, it's not about having a lot of money. It's about what's used for budgeting. Microsoft has tons of money, but their divisions have budgets that they got to stay within. You don't use the entire company's money to do something. It's never like that, because you got to have – there's a difference between revenue and operating income and net income and what you use to invest in marketing. Everything is devised like that. So,
I went to business school. Don't worry.
No, you understand what I'm saying? So the point I'm trying to make – is the actual budget and what's been designed and used for Nintendo over these years and over these console cycles has not been good on a level that they even actually saying. And but from what I've been able
to... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Just to wrap it up. But from what I hear, that move was specifically designed to prepare them for what could happen depending on the success or non-success of this system, which is very realistic.
Well, let me just counter.
Good points. Very good points.
They're very excellent points. Absolutely excellent points. Now, just seeing things from my perspective, let's just understand something. Wii U hurt Nintendo. Nintendo has taken its time in terms of its decisions. It's always done its own thing, but it's done its own thing at its own pace. And I think the Wii U was the point where it realized by doing that, it's dragged so far behind, it's worried that it didn't make it to the ship. That PS4 and Xbox are so far ahead, they can't catch up. So I mean, look at what they've done in the past. They didn't adapt to CD technology until years after Sony and Microsoft utilized it with the GameCube. They were using cartridges and all that. Now they're coming back to cartridges because they realize people actually like cartridges.
It fits more on the cartridge than what you can do on a disc.
Why they switched back to cartridges though on the Switch, honestly.
Well, still, okay, but
the reason
still,
is because of the fact that they can take it like mobile and everything, and you don't want optical media
get my point though. There's a revolution here. It's a matter of ideas that worked well in the past and trying to utilize them in a way that still defines Nintendo but gives them a chance to try to play catch up. Take a look at motion gaming. Wii U wasn't big on that. What am I going to do? Throw around the gamepad like a frisbee? It's not going to work.
I did
it's
when I played with Day of the Sky Soldier, I'll tell you that.
Well, okay, yeah. Fuck that game. The Wii version that came with it was better than the Wii U version. That was sad. But take a look. Now we got the Joy-Cons. Now we can use them like Wii remotes, or we can use them like regular controllers. We have multifunctionality. So, they're bringing back that idea to try and work in their favor. Will it sell as well as the Wii? Probably not. But is it something? Yes.
Yes.
You've got a new Mario game that's actually feeling more like a Mario experience than Super Mario 3D World. I loved Mario 3D World, but I can't imagine a hero being super strong and everything like that running around in a cat suit. I want him to dress like Mario. So I think Nintendo understands where its place is, and all it's trying to do now is refine its best ideas into a format that it believes it will work in its favor with multiple functions, with the games that'll make it work, with the cartridge format that's comfortable for both on-the-go play and at home. I think it's trying to put all these ideas together. It's a bold idea. Will it work in their favor? No, they probably have, if it doesn't, they probably have the backup plan. Like Hip Hop Gamer said, they're probably going to look more into mobile and see what it can do there, even though Super Mario Run does better on the demo front than selling for the $10.
Yeah, what the? Yeah. Yo, wait, just let me say something.
Go ahead.
$10?
It's not bad. It's not bad. But for a mobile game, it's murder.
No, that's what I'm saying for the platform that you're on. And listen, I tell people this all the time. I don't care how big your name is. You could be Jay-Z, Beyonce, Michael Jackson, Muhammad Ali. I don't care who you are. Jimmy Fallon, whatever. You still have to be human about what's happening. You still have to be human about what's happening. And like, $10 in mobile, you know how many other games that as much as we like Mario, there's other games that's better than Mario for a cheaper, like $1.99 that you can play a game and it's better than a Mario Run.
Sure.
So why would you do that? Like, that's stupid. But
games too that are better than Mario Run.
I was making the argument, actually. like I was making the argument actually, on our show, Robert, about how they probably should have made it where it was you buy each world individually as opposed to a full package. You could do the full package for $10 and that's fine, have that as an option, but have it where you pay $1, $2 or whatever per world, and you just kind of keep adding on to that, or you can get all together for a discount or whatever. If you bought them all separately, it'd be $12. I think it's six worlds or something, right? So if you did $2.
That whole business model was stupid. And that's what I mean. That's what I mean. They got the wrong people working for them. Because anybody that knows the mobile business, you're about to go into a business that you've never been there. So you need to have someone that has the proper expert experience and expertise to take your sacred brand name successfully. You don't get a second shot at a first impression. It's now that stain their brand in terms of doing that. So now when they try again, they could do it right, but they never gonna let you forget the first time you messed
okay,
up.
Okay, so there we go. That does tie back into my point, though. Nintendo did do this stuff, and sometimes things don't have a good first impression. The Wii U didn't have a good first impression, despite the fact it had stellar games and everything like that. So now Nintendo is learned from that mistake, and we're starting to see all these ideas that work so well for the company in the past implemented into a product. I mean, is it like I said? There's no guarantee it's going to be a success. For all we know, the third-party support will drop off again because they'll think they could be burned like they were with a Wii U. But by the same token, they might have learned from that, and they might be going after third parties to create genuine experiences, as I've said before. So there is that potential. There is more potential in the Switch than there was in the Wii U. Absolutely. And there is more drive. I think even with ridiculous stuff. I saw this game where you're eating a sandwich in record time or whatever. Was that 1-2 Switch again too? I don't know what that was.
It's like a Warrior
not
title.
Every experience.
It's
not every like experience. Game, yeah. Not every experience is going to work, but I know a lot of them will. People are going to be playing Zelda and they're going to be talking about how it's the best game probably since the Link to the Past or Ocarina of Time or whatever their favorite Zelda.
They use some overused word like immersion and into the game.
They're immersed, but
it's Nintendo Skyrim.
Any company could fail. For all we know, Sony could have exited the industry after the PlayStation 3 was introduced at $600 because it was a laughing stock for a while Uncharted came after several years, and the Xbox 360 established itself with the Call of Duty series a few years after it came out. It's just a matter of time and seeing what happens with it. Like Gerard said, it's a matter of seeing what happens over the next couple of years and seeing if Nintendo is serious this time. But I think as far as esports goes, as far as the streaming game goes, as far as its design game goes, as far as going after third parties, I think I'll come back again to that first step on the journey. It's just a matter of if they tumble down the hill or if they continue on in stride.
Now, can I make the counterpoint here as far as with Nintendo, as far as going into the mobile market and having it be a testing ground, basically, if things fail, I'm just kind of making the argument that Nintendo is not going to get themselves out of the hardware business just because, one, there's they're too proud, because two, they are a very traditional Japanese company, and they're just too proud to kind of get themselves out of that entirely. I think it's just, again, this is a matter of Nintendo kind of playing catch up, because they see properties like Uncharted or Sonic the Hedgehog or Rayman or whatever, these prominent gaming properties that have their roots in traditional gaming, just like Nintendo's games do, making the move over the mobile and having some success with it, and eventually realizing maybe we could try this out, because instead of thinking that if we put Mario on an iOS device, it's going to dilute the brand of our consoles, and we can't have that, because Nintendo is, they are all about the console space through and through, and yes, console does include handhelds as well, kind of by the definition of the word, but
it's a portable console.
It's a matter of them eventually realizing that this is just makes business sense, and just how it would make business sense, say for example, to make a Pokemon MMO, but who knows when Nintendo will go into the MMO space. That's a whole other matter right there. Who knows?
I mean, maybe one day we'll see that. Maybe we'll see him do a crossover with Blizzard. There's always the possibility that's there. And it's always nice to have a backup plan. I mean, they've taken forever to dabble in the mobile game, but look at how well Pokemon Go. I mean, even though everybody hates it now, look how well it's done over the past year. Now these idiots running around the park. Oh, there's a Psyduck. I gotta go.
Well, it's a phenomenon. You know,
but I think it's just a matter of, I think Nintendo will stick around. I believe this console, they're going to have more drive than we've seen with the Wii U, and I think that's going to keep the third parties around. I could be wrong, but I think to have this situation happen twice to them, you know, I've never seen, like, failures twice. I mean, granted, I think the last time was, like, Sega failed with the 32X and kind of failed with the Saturn, but kind of didn't because the Japanese market was amazing. Yeah. So I think it's just a matter of, can Nintendo keep that momentum going? And hopefully, from what I'm hearing and everything, it will. It's just a matter of what happens at E3 and after.
And I know that they're going to probably have a bit of, like, an appetizer, whatever you want to call it, with showing it off at PAX South and even at PAX East. And I know it's going to be out after, like before PAX East, rather. But I feel like it's still going to give people the opportunity to get a good feel of what they're going to be utilizing with the Nintendo Switch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, and this has been a great discussion. I think, is hip hop okay? Is he are you there?
You're a little too quiet for us, hip hop.
You've got mad in like 2 minutes. I'm just making sure.
I actually have a question I want to kind of pose to you guys. So, you know, within this first year of the Switch, you know, Nintendo's being very smart about this. You know, and a lot of people aren't realizing this, as you said, you know, Robert, about people getting mad about where are the games and everything.
We're getting
a new Legend of Zelda. We're also getting not really a new, but like a new-ish version of Super Mario Kart. And we're also getting a brand new Super Mario game as well within the first year of the console's life.
And a new Splatoon.
And also a new Splatoon, yeah. But like I'm thinking, like, you know, just kind of leading up to me thinking about in terms of like their established, like their long-time properties, basically.
Okay.
So what's like the next long-time property you think is going to be, you know, have like a new game come out or whatever for the Switch, like after those three are out?
I'm going to go with Metroid.
I'm going to go with Pokemon because that, look at Sun and Moon. It's selling like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Doing a Pokemon game, adventure style game. I'm not talking like, you know, Snap, although Snap would be fun. You know, doing like an adventure style game in early 2018 would establish the Switch in its stride when there are systems on the shelf ready to sell. I think between that, a Metroid game in the fall, and obviously Smash Brothers sometimes in 2018, those three would be the big tentpole titles that they can build around. Mm-hmm. But I'd love to see them dabble with their classic franchises. I've seen it. You know, we've seen F-Zero X come back on the Wii U. We've seen Excitebike 64 come back on the Wii U. They're probably just testing ground to see if those licenses are still relevant, because new versions of those games would kick ass. I would love to see a new Excitebike, because Excitebike 64 was one of the Nintendo 64's most underrated games. But it was so well done. So I was like, you know, I think 2018 will be, they'll have their temple titles. They'll have a Pokemon game, maybe even Pokken Tournament, which would be nice. Yeah. I'd love to
see them doing that. I can see them doing that.
You know, I could see these temple titles, but they will build around it. I think it's just a matter of listening to the feedback, like Reggie is, and seeing if we get that Mother 3, if we get that Metroid that Evan wants so bad, which hopefully will be like Metroid Prime, please.
Gerard, before we get into yours, actually, Evan, I wanted you to kind of like talk a little bit more about Metroid. Like, do you mean like a new Metroid Prime style thing, or like a new 2D Metroid?
Of course he does.
I would say a mixture of Metroid, of the gameplay aspect of Metroid Prime and Metroid Other M. Maybe not the story aspect of Metroid Other M, but the gameplay aspect of it mixed with the first person aspect of Metroid Prime. That's what I would love to see.
That might be a little too much, because they contradict each other, the gameplay styles. You know, because when you have to switch stuff around, between the two gameplay styles, I'd prefer to see either a classic 2D style Metroid game or a first person, or both. Obviously, we've gotten both in the past.
Yes.
Yeah. Could be like a switching gameplay styles. And, you know, you could actually very easily kind of like, you know, work that way into like the speech of the marketing, really. It's like, oh, Switch gameplay is like you get the best of both types of Metroids, basically.
Right. You can switch between the first person and third person modes.
Yeah.
You know what I would like to see? First off, everything y'all said is great, and I agree with it. I would like to see those two. But something I would like to see that I feel would make Nintendo, like, really, really relevant in terms of lasting and staying power. I think
a new Paperboy. No,
Paperboy.
Shut up.
I really would love One of the best things from Nintendo 64 was their wrestling games. You know what I'm saying? Wrestling 2000 and all those games and stuff like that.
WWF No Mercy still the best. Wrestling games.
Like, Revenge. What the hell?
WWF Revenge, Goldberg. Yeah, that was crazy. Like, so the thing is, I think it'd be real cool if they did something cool where, like, they had all the Nintendo characters and they created a brand new IP, but it was a wrestling game where, you know, Mario and Sonic, like, do a tag team power bomb to Dr. Robotnik and Bowser. Like, something.
No. You know, call it Pro Wrestling Plus. And then, of course, have that thing at the end where, like, a winner is you!
I just think it'd be really different, really cool.
Would you say that maybe they should collaborate with Yuke's, the guys who die, or Yuke's?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, they should collaborate with the Yuke's and Aki development teams and create a wrestling game based around the characters, like, you know, based around Nintendo's beloved characters.
I mean, we kind of saw a little bit of that as hinted with the Pikachu Luchador character in Pokken Tournament, and I could actually honestly see that working with the pro wrestling aspect with all the other Nintendo characters.
Yeah, imagine you got Mario coming off the top rope with an elbow smash. He's a plumber, so yeah. Like. His special move could be he'll take, like, a plunger and put it in your face and pull your face off.
Dude, the weapons that they're going to pull under the ring.
Dude, that sounds like WrestleMania the arcade game all over again.
Yeah. WWE All-Stars or something like that.
Yeah, I know.
But think about it. Still to this day, those wrestling games had an effect on us, and we still love them, even though we have WWE 2K and, now. And as far as we've come with wrestling games, those games still have a major impact, and they're still great, and we would play them now as if they just came out today because they're that good. So if you took that idea and built it around the Nintendo brands and franchises, just like how you built Smash Brothers, it's like you are recreating a brand new IP. Also, a brand new mode of play with these characters, and even though it don't have to be bloody or anything like that,
right.
it's still fighting and it's wrestling. I mean, I would love to see Bowser powerbomb Mario.
I'll get a shirt of that for sure. Call it Slam Brothers too in that case.
Yeah, Slam Brothers.
Oh, that would be hot.
Oh man, I believe trademark it because it
trademark that hard
waiting,
man.
We're waiting with our ideas.
I went to business school, remember? So
yeah, man. Oh.
Super Slam Brothers! Super Slam Brothers! Oh!
No! Market it. No, let's patent that quick.
I feel like Slim Jim is like a sponsor.
You know, like, Acclaim's going to steal that shit and come back. Watch. But no, I mean, it's a good opportunity. I'd love to see that. I mean, not another, you know, like Mario and Sonic at the Rio friggin' 2020 Olympics crap.
Zika edition!
No, I'm talking about think about it, son. Mario and Luigi could be the tag team, right? You come and like you coming down the aisle, they got their own entrance and stuff like that.
I could totally see that.
No. You gotta get managers too, just like you have Birdo be the distraction, spit an egg in somebody's face, and then you win the match.
Yeah, like Toad could be one of the managers or something like that. And then Princess could be Queen Elizabeth or something like that. Like son. Super Slam Brothers,
you are patting this right now.
It's a retro Zap.
Hey, this is on tape, dudes. This is gonna be out there. So if it comes out, we know who's responsible for it. Okay,
right, exactly.
So, I mean, something like that. If Nintendo, Nintendo had its heart in the right place with Star Fox Zero. It just didn't have its brain in its head when it came to getting a good control scheme working for it. If it just had regular analog controls. Holy shit, would have been amazing.
Which they could possibly do if they port it over to the Switch. They could implement the motion. Without the motion controls.
I mean, if they can get on a level in which they understand the hardcore appeal of these games, yet still make it something that doesn't overstep boundaries in terms of like how certain games work today. If they can keep that mindset with these games, Super Slam Brothers or a Star Fox Zero that has
Slam Brothers. So, yo, ain't nothing else to talk about on this podcast.
Ain't nothing else to talk about. If they can do that, and work with third party, I mean, if they can work with third parties.
Oh, my God.
Your show's been going like 6 hours.
Yo, look, now, seriously, though. Seriously, like let me explain something to y'all. Like when you release the show, right?
Yeah.
Like you release the whole show, but certain parts of the show where it get really intense, you need to release those separately on social media or something like that. Because I'm telling you, the impact, yo, that Super Slam. Listen, you see how we're talking about this right now.
I'm making a note, Gerard.
How excited we are. That's what Nintendo as a brand needs to get back to. You know what I'm saying? They need to get back to the point where, like, all right, perfect example. Yo, Rob, whenever we at E3, Evan, whenever we at E3, yes. You already know what it is. When you got Microsoft conference in the morning, Ubisoft conference, all this other stuff, and we're all excited.
Yeah.
But when it's time for that Sony conference, it's like the moment you walk in, it's like, oh, it's a whole different feel.
You know shit's going to get real.
Yeah. It's about to get real. Like, because they done. So this Super Slam Brothers, this conversation, it's a real moment. It's like, yo, this shit, that bad boys.
Reggie, we'll be standing by waiting for your call.
Get the trademark on it, like, and then sell it, like, as an idea.
Seriously, yeah, seriously, man.
Serious.
When you go to E3, have a meeting with Reggie. We're going to sit down, we're going to wear luchador masks, and we're going to talk about it.
My body is Reggie.
You know what's so funny?
Make Reggie the final boss. Make Reggie the Vince McMahon of Super Slam Brothers.
Oh my God, I can fucking see that.
You can't defeat me. My body is ready.
You know what else? Would it be real crazy? Is you could actually do like a WWE Nintendo brand relationship, and you could actually like have like a special guest character like Undertaker, and he's a little cartoon figure in the world.
No. Make outfits make Undertaker Yoshi.
And you know what? It can go even further. Oh, can make a meatball.
We need to vote. We need to book a meeting with Nintendo, like right.
We do. No.
We got this Nintendo WWE like partnership, and we're gonna make Amiibo. It's gonna be great.
They're gonna make a shit ton of money.
Let me explain something to you. Like all the WWE wrestlemen that they sell, they can sell WrestleMania Amiibos, and people would.
They did that with the Ninja Turtles. They did that. They dressed up Ninja Turtles in WWE costumes, and now those things are sold out all over the place.
So I'm telling you. And now
we need to book a meeting with Nintendo.
Now they're making money outside of the actual game selling. Like, you know what I'm saying? Come on, dude. And then, like, my man Eric, I'm not sure.
Nerds Media, like, man. Nerds Clothing.
But, yeah. So, he has a deal with WWE. That's my boy. Like his t-shirts is on wrestling every week. So my thing is, he already has the
Dude, I am going to send this to Eric, man. I'm going to send this to Eric.
Yeah, do it. This will be amazing. So, but we've gone way off topic.
You said Super Slam Brothers. I came up with the idea of the wrestling thing. You came up with the name of it, Super Slam Brothers. That generated the energy that created it. Yo, we are in.
We're making money.
Podcast
comes out and somebody else steals it. Jerks.
I mean, I don't even buy like amiibos, but I would totally get a Yoshi Taker amiibo.
But no, if Nintendo, to wrap this up because we've been
we should probably wrap this up.
It's been about 3 hours. To wrap up this point, if Nintendo can really grasp that kind of innovation and make sure all these cylinders are firing on the other ends. There's no reason the Switch can't succeed. Will it catch up to PS4 and Xbox One? Probably not. But it'll put Nintendo back into the talking game. And it'll make them relevant again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there were little sparks with that with the Wii U. You know, like Bayonetta 2, people were talking about it. But not everybody was into it because not everybody owned a Wii U.
Right. It's nobody wanted to buy it because they thought, oh, it's a kid's system.
And then you play Bayonetta 2, be like, holy shit, why isn't this on Xbox One?
Yeah. Because nobody at Xbox wanted it.
It just didn't have the support for enough people.
I think they'll be fine, but what we need to do is we need to come back after E3 and rediscuss this point.
I actually agree with that. We did the roundtable at E3 with another Retro Gaming Podcast. I agree. I feel like we need to go back and do that again.
And get hip hop.
Sure.
Yeah.
For sure. We'll get hip hop in there. For sure. We got to get you on the Arcast anyway, hip hop.
Yeah. So you can yell at David some more. That's great.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, hip hop already knows how it is. 2 weeks from now, I'm going to run in him San Antonio, PAX South.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. PAX South. Yep. I'll be there. It's going to be fun.
First one. This will be a good time.
It's my first PAX South too. Yeah, so it will play the Nintendo there. I'm pretty.
Yeah, we'll be able to do it like the first hour, then the media, because that booth is gonna be packed to the gills the whole show.
Yeah, so we gonna go up there and we go like, yo, you know who we are, so you know.
We're the super.
It's like with Ed Boon. It's like with Ed Boon. It's like, hey, you know who we are.
That's it. Like
Super Slam Brothers. What's up?
The Super Slam Brothers creators. What's up?
Yo, and the promotional campaign could be like Reggie saying you're fired, and somebody turn around and say what, and body slams him. Crazy. Welcome to Super Slam Brothers. Like,
yeah, I think barely between the four of us will be able to body slam Reggie. That's the problem. <'Cause he's built.
laughs> It's just be like a close up of like Reggie's face saying your body is not Reggie. Camera's
out. This has been great, man. I appreciate y'all having me on, man. This is really
anytime, real dude. Thank you so much for being on this special episode. Yeah. I feel like we should wrap this up. Do some shameless plugging right now, Gerard. Please plug away about Hip Hop Gamer. Where can people check your shit out?
Yo, you already know what it is, man. On your Hot 97 every day. That's my word. Hot97.com. Make sure you check me out there. Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube is all the same. It's all Hip Hop Gamer. So make sure y'all check me out. And also check me out with BET. I'm doing a lot of things. And also check out the Big Three with Ice Cube and Allen Iverson. I actually met them recently at an event taking place here in New York. So pay attention to that, because that could be something that gets involved with 2K Sports. So the Big Three. So pay attention to all of that. So make sure y'all follow me. God bless. Super Slam Brothers, baby.
Yes.
Super Slam Brothers. We got the answer in there.
All right. David, DCD, do your plug-in.
Yep. Absolutely. David, you first. So if you want to, if you want to find me specifically on Twitter, it's at The Guilty Man. Or if you want to follow the ArcCast, which is the podcast that Robert and I do, is at Arc Podcast on Twitter or Facebook.com/ArcPodcast. We're also on RetroZap.com. That's primarily where you can find us, where you can find basically like all the other like amazing podcasts on there. But that's RetroZap.com for ArcCast.
And then if you want to follow my additional work, I do stuff over at worldwidegaming.com. WWG.com is where you can find it, actually. And, man, I mean, during this last 24 hours, I banged out maybe about 40-something stories about the Switch.
Holy shit.
It was ridiculous. Wow. Well, I had to type these quick stories about Fire Emblem and all this stuff, and then I had to play catch-up about midnight last night. So, all the wrap-up there on the Switch can be found at WWG.com. And, of course, you can follow me at Twitter.com/TheDCD. You can find me on Facebook, Robert Workman. And I'm going to be at PAX South in a couple of weeks. So if you guys make it down to the show and you see me, say, hey, what's up, DCD, and then try to body slam me. It won't work.
Unless it's Reggie. Unless it's Reggie.
I mean, I can't wait to run into hip hop and all them. It's going to be a great event.
I can't wait.
It's going to be a good time. Evan, David, you guys should make it down sometime. I know you're on budgets, but we have PAX East.
Yes, we do have PAX East coming up.
So yeah, we will all be at PAX East, it sounds like, which is good.
Yeah, right.
Sounds great.
And so for my listeners, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, or if you're a band and want to be featured on our No Borders No Race podcast show, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbashbrigade.com. You can follow me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_deck, on the J-pop, anime, and video games amino pages at kingbabyduckesh, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/omnistreetinc. Like us on Facebook.com/BostonBashBrigade and on Facebook.com/LandOfEsh. And don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including The Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smash Rook, and Nerd Crave.
And I'll tell you what, Evan, the best way to end this episode is with Onyx Slam. I mean, considering all the discussion we had tonight, I think Nintendo is ready to slam back into the game scene.
Yes!
It's a Switch for the better. Ooh.
All right, so at three, we should all just yell Super Slam Brothers, all right?
All right.
Yeah. One, two, three.
Super Slam Brothers!
That was a fucking... I'll tell you that one.
If you ain't down with that, I got two words for you. Nintendo.
Suck it!
Classic. Thank you, guys. We will see you next
time. Yes. See you guys next time.
Coming through with the scam, foolproof plan. B-boys make some noise and just